This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Dr. Guido Holzman is with us today. Guido is senior fellow at the Mises Institute. He's chairman of the economics department at the University of Angers in France, author of 5 books, his great biography of Ludwig von Mises, Mises, Then the Last Night of Liberalism, the forthcoming book on the ethics of money production. You know, Guido, sometimes what people might otherwise consider abstruse economic theoretical questions become very relevant in the real world, in the everyday world. You know, one thing that impresses me is paper money. Now, we've had economists who are otherwise pretty much free market, men like Adam Smith or Milton Friedman and others, argue that you really can't have a gold standard. You can't have metallic money in circulation because it costs too much, whereas paper money is really the road to go, what did Smith call it, like a highway in the sky, because there's no cost to it, unlike building a highway on the ground.
Yeah, that's a very popular argument. I think it has a big impact on the thinking of people who have no economic education. I mean, this is something that is intuitively plausible. They don't understand anything about the benefits that would result from monetary policy. But if you tell them, look, I mean, we can have something as money that is very expensive to produce or something that is much cheaper to produce. More expensive to produce would be silver coins or gold coins, and a very cheap one would be paper money. So it's good to use the cheap one. We can make economies and invest these economies into productive enterprise, therefore derive a net benefit from it. That's exactly the argument that we find in Adam Smith, as you have pointed out, and also in David Ricardo, who gave a most eloquent exposition of this argument. But it has also been very early on criticized and I think decisively refuted. Your compatriot, William Goode, a great monetary theorist of the early 19th century, has written a wonderful book, A Short History of Paper Money in the United States, which I heartily recommend to the readers of LRC.com, in which he refuted this argument. The basic fallacy is that you just compare paper money and gold money from a very narrow point of view. You just look at the production costs of the monetary object. And second, you pretend that all that counts for money is really the exchange service. Now, this is, of course, I mean, you can perform a comparison in these terms, but then you have not reached a conclusive insight, because there are more things involved in these two aspects. It's true, if money really only rendered the service of being exchanged against other goods, and if all the costs that were entailed were the ones relating to the production of the physical object, one paper note, for example, as compared to one silver coin or one gold coin, then, of course, it's obvious that paper money is less expensive than gold coins or silver coins. It renders the same service at a much lower cost. But this comparison, as I said, is much too narrow. There are wider aspects involved. So for the first thing, the services rendered by money do not only concern the exchange service, but also include things like insurance against depreciation of purchasing power. Now, it's clear that paper money cannot offer, in this respect, the same guarantees as a silver coin or a gold coin. Gold and silver, precisely because they're expensive to produce, cannot be produced ad libitum. You cannot produce just overnight any quantity of them, and therefore the consumer, that is the user of a gold coin or a silver coin, has an inbuilt insurance that his means of exchange will keep its purchasing power, or at least will not lose it as rapidly as a paper money or as an electronic money. And secondly, the costs do not only concern, the relevant costs do not only concern the production of the physical object, but also include wider things, such as, for example, a Fed watching industry. Right? When you have a silver standard or a gold standard, then the quantities of these monies that can be or will be produced in the near future can fairly easily be anticipated by mining experts. On the other hand, if you have a paper money produced by a central bank, and a central bank that can change its decision from one day to another, then you need, of course, experts and very astute observers of central bank policy, which will tell you what the probable policy of central banks will be in the next days, weeks, months, possibly years. Now, these experts are numerous today. We have thousands of such people operating in the world economy and being paid fairly high salaries. The last point that needs to be taken account of concerns the production of the physical object itself. Now, of course, it is technically conceivable that central banks just hire three persons. They have a president who makes all the decisions. They have a guy working with a machine that produces all the money, and then they have maybe a doorman or something. But that's not how actually central banks operate. They have thousands of employees, and that's a very surprising thing that I found again in researching for my latest book. For example, the Federal Reserve employs some 13,000 people. And now you can imagine that most of them are academics and so on, so they are all at fairly high salaries. Same thing with the German Bundesbank, the German central bank, which employs around 11,000 civil servants. Same thing in France, some 11,000 or 12,000 civil servants. So I should guess that the central banks in the world, probably if you take all together, employ around 100,000 people, and their salaries are incomparably higher than the salaries of the poor people working the mines in South Africa and in other places where there is gold mining and silver mining. So even from the mere cost of production perspective, central banking is much more expensive in practice than gold money or silver money.
You know, in the great William Gouge book, that's G-O-U-G-E, and that hitherto very rare book is available at a cheap price in the Mises.org store. I highly recommend the book, but one of the incidents he relates in the book, and he's quoting Pelletier Webster, who was the first American economist writing in the 18th century, seeing a sailor, a drunken sailor, dancing a hornpipe, dressed entirely in a suit and hat made from paper notes, the Continental notes, which had become valueless when issued by the Continental Congress during the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's how all paper monies end up. By the way, since you mentioned Milton Friedman in your introduction, I should point out in all fairness that even though Milton Friedman was not an Austrian economist, he came around on this question at the end of his career when people started not to listen to him anymore. So in the 1980s, he published a couple of papers in which he had second thoughts on the costs of a fiat money standard as compared to natural money such as silver and gold. So Friedman was a good man. He came around on this crucial question.
Well, and of course, a great economist, even if he was a monetarist.
Exactly.
Udo Holzman, thanks so much for talking to us today about this important subject, and I hope that we don't have to see the executives of Goldman Sachs dressed in suits made of American dollars.
Well, but it would suit them well.
I wouldn't cry any tears.
Thank you, Lou.
Thank you, Guido.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.